You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
Welcome back for hour number three. It's Mike, George, and Matt taking you through the last hour all the way till 10 o'clock. We got the weekend fantasy update with Joe Galina, Frank Stanfill, Mike Florio. Those guys will be coming in studio in the next hour. We'll switch things up. We talked baseball for the last hour. World Baseball Classic tonight, so keep your eyes glued to the television. U.S. Versus the Dominican. Who do we say the starting pitchers were? It's Danny Duffy versus Irvin Santana?
That is correct.
So that one's on at 9 o'clock, I believe. So tune in there. I will be watching. We can talk about it tomorrow. So wanted to get back, Matt, and get a couple of your thoughts. George and I talked a little bit about some free agency. So I get your thoughts quickly, and then I'll move around to some other teams about New England. And they're just dominating the postseason right now. The irony of them making the Brandon Cooks trade is that when George and I were talking earlier in the show, the Saints appear poised to sign Malcolm Butler to a deal, and he has a first-round transition. He has a first-round tender attached to him. So there's going to be some sort of deal worked out. The Saints aren't going to want to give up that number 11 pick, I think, that they have. But they are sitting there with the number 32 pick, which they got from New England for as part of the Brandon Cooks deal. So they may end up getting their first-round pick back after all this, the Pats. They'll lose Malcolm Butler in order to get it done, but you know how they are. They just kind of move on. They understand the prices of the players, and they don't waver from it.
You know, that sounds like it's going to end up being a trade, Cooks for Butler. So, I mean, I'm fine with that. New Orleans definitely needs some defense there. I mean, as an NFL fan, I would have liked to see Malcolm Butler wind up on the Steelers, your team, because I mean, the Patriots seem to exploit them every time in the playoffs, and I think a guy like Butler could really help them, but obviously that's not going to be. So, I mean, the Patriots are just a smart organization. As we were saying last week, it's just like checkmate on the NFL system. They always get it. I like the Brandon Cooks move. Is he a number one? Maybe he's a high-end number two. I just think the thing is, at the end of the season, He's gonna have those points. He's gonna do it. And there may be some weeks where he disappoints a little. There's other weeks I think he's gonna win you that week. So he's a move that I really like. It's just another weapon, and the Patriots have proved that they know how to use their weapons.
George, on the New England front, who has a better season next year, PPR league, Brandon Cooks or Julian Edelman?
Interesting. Probably the one who gets in the end zone more. Probably going to go Julian Edelman. I think still that we know he has the chemistry with Brady. You mentioned PPR. I think that's the key there for me. I still think Edelman's going to catch a whole boatload of passes there. I can see it being Cooks for yardage and touchdowns, but I think I'll stick with Edelman here.
Yeah, so last year, just to give folks an idea, Julian Edelman ended up with 98 catches for 1,106 yards with three scores. Brandon Cooks, 78 catches, 1,173 yards with eight touchdowns. Cooks is one of only three wide receivers in the last two seasons to catch more than 75 passes, more than 1,000 yards, and eight touchdowns or more in the last 2 years. So he brings a lot of stats with him, obviously, in a high-octane passing offense in New Orleans. But, Matt, what are your thoughts, Edelman or Cooks in a PPR league?
I'm going to go slightly Cooks. I think New England is going to use this weapon, and I see it as a perfect marriage. I know there's a lot of mouths to feed in that offense. Also, is Gronk ever going to stay healthy for the 16-game season? So I don't know about Gronk staying healthy. And I think Edelman and Cooks could survive well together. I think their targets, I think their receptions will be pretty much right in line with each other. I think Cooks gets more of the touchdowns. I think they're really going to exploit that deep threat. And New England, once again, will be having home field advantage and on their way to another Super Bowl. I really don't see it any other way.
Yeah.
Who can beat him right now?
Have to play.
I mean, only maybe the Texans if they get Tony Romo.
Matt talked about the Steelers signing Butler. Honestly, the way that game was coached, they could have four Hall of Famers in the secondary, and they wouldn't have won. I've never been more frustrated with a coaching staff than I was after that game. It didn't matter who was playing. Guys were wide open because of the way they schemed. So, yes, Butler would be a nice addition. But Steelers have drafted some young guys. I think they'll continue to address it through the draft. But, frankly, if they don't find a different way to play against New England, a different way to scheme and waver from their zone packages, then they're going to be toast every time they play him. Tomlin's teams have gotten shredded by Belichick's teams for a while now. Brady owns the Steelers in this current iteration. It wasn't that way necessarily when Dick LeBeau was there, and he's not. So we shall see going forward. Sorry, that was a little bit of pent-up aggression there, George. So I don't even know if you were going to say anything. So I'll pass it over to you if you have any comments.
I guess Pittsburgh could be a threat to New England, but I don't think a huge one. I think the only team that could beat New England in the AFC as constituted right now would be Houston or Denver, whoever wins the Romo sweepstakes. And other than that, it's just scary. I've said it before. New England's playing chess. Everyone else is playing checkers. It's just I think they're going for it. I think they realize Brady's shelf life is what? In the best case scenario, 3 more seasons. Best case. So they might as well just go for broke now and win all the bowls you can.
And I think the other thing, like the Patriots always have that advantage, which they always have the home field. They always have home field throughout the playoffs. And playing in the AFC East, I don't see that changing anytime soon. With the Jets are done. Maybe Miami's a little better. The Bills are always a 500 team at best. So
it, when they play in that week of division, I mean, what's the worst case scenario for them division wise? It's probably 5-1. Maybe you want to say 4-2, but it could easily be 6-0. Maybe I'll give Miami a win there. I think Miami has improved actually a decent amount this offseason, but not enough. They're not in New England's class. The Jets are going to be too easy wins. Buffalo, they have a whole bunch of issues of their own as well.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully. The other point too is like Roethlisberger at home is tremendous, and Roethlisberger on the road is, you know, it's like Jekyll and Hyde.
That doesn't make sense to me for a veteran of this type, unless it's the players around him. Mike?
Yeah.
You have a Steelers fan?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like it's overplayed, but there isn't any denying the difference in the statistics between home and away. I mean, to some extent, Drew Brees has had those numbers that look very different on the road.
We get that.
Yeah, but sure. Drew Brees' numbers aren't that bad. Like I remember
somebody did
a thing.
You're right.
And I was looking at it last right before the draft season, and I went heavy on Drew Brees, and I was very happy about that. But the Roethlisberger situation, I mean, I don't know. Is he goes on the road and becomes
doesn't
like,
make sense.
He gets away from the wife, he's a party animal.
Especially the manner in which they play. They play so aggressively at home, and they rack up a lot of wins too. So I don't know if they're just finding different ways to do it, but you know, we saw, gosh, they were on the road against Kansas City in the playoff game, and they can't get the ball in the end zone. Granted, that's a really good defensive team, but you know, kicking 6 field goals to win a playoff game, they had many opportunities to score, and they just couldn't do it. So I don't know what that is, if it's red zone specific or not. But yeah, listen, he's got challenges on the road. I don't think he plays horribly, but he just doesn't. He definitely doesn't put up the numbers that he does at home, where they're scoring touchdowns and just blowing teams out. You know, they had an easy day against Miami in the playoffs. They go to Kansas City, and it's 6 field goals, and then the next week, you know, nobody played well in that game. Really, it's not that loss does not fall on Roethlisberger to me, but in any event, it is what it is. I was going to talk about the Jaguars, but you mentioned Miami a little bit, George. They re-signed really a bunch of guys. They brought in. They re-signed Andre Branch, Jermon Bushrod, Rashad Jones, a big productive safety for them who was injured last year, and Kenny Stills returning to Miami, which I wasn't sure that was going to happen, but he got a pretty good deal, 4 years, $32 million. That was more than I thought Kenny Stills was going to get, but you know, they obviously like the weapons that they have there, Landry, Stills, and Parker. They got a nice young receiving core there now, correct?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it. That is a good receiving card. Some people actually think Stills took less money to go better. He could have made $10 million as far as an AAV is concerned. The skill positions are there. Receivers are fine.
By the way, did you expect that? Would you have expected him to get that much?
Did I expect
in the 10
him?
Range?
No, but that's what the market was paying him. I am surprised he went back to Miami. I did not think he would be back there. I thought he would.
Me neither. I didn't think they'd spend money there.
I thought he. I don't think it made sense to spend money there. You were already set with Landry and Parker. Not an area of need for the team. But they've made several moves. They are assuming Ajayi is the running back he was last year. Wide receiver is fine. Remember, they got traded for Julius Thomas as well. If Thomas can stay healthy, I understand that's sort of an oxymoron there. But if he can stay healthy for somewhat, it gives them their best threat at tight end in quite a while. Jordan Cameron is gone. The question of offense is going to be Tannehill. Can he take that next step? Man, he doesn't need to be Tom Brady. Can he just be above average? Then that would help there. The defense with Cameron Wake had the comeback season last year. And Amakun Sue, we know what he can do. They signed Rashard Jones. The cornerback helps somewhat. This team is interesting. Like I said, they're not the Patriots, so I don't want to get anyone going saying that. But they're interesting, where they could be. I definitely think they're at the very least, a wild card threat.
I agree with George in that the Dolphins are interesting. If Parker can take that next step, he has immense talent. Tannehill, is he the guy? I think this is a very big season for him. Kenny Britt, I know he scored those touchdowns, but he had like three times. His touchdown percentage is just unsustainable. It's like three times the normal rate. So am I a big Kenny Britt fan? Not really. They gave him the 4 years, 32. I get, like George said, that's the going rate. Kenny Britt got 4 years, 32, which I'm kind of scratching my head that Terrell Pryor only got 1 year for eight. But I guess, we'll see what happens
that's
with that.
That's bewildering to me.
Yeah, it's... the Dolphins are definitely the second best team in that division, which isn't saying much, but I agree with George. They should be a wild card team again. And, unless the Bills start putting some weapons in there in the receiver game, they're signing these Corey Brown and some other, depth guy. So unless the Bills make a splash, I don't see their offense, even though they were like eighth or ninth, this is a passing league, and you got to get some weapons for Sammy Watkins. So, hopefully
Watkins won't stay healthy either.
Yeah, that's the other problem too. But hopefully with the new offensive coordinator and the new regime, the Bills could take a step. But I'm pessimistic about it as a fan.
Yeah, as Matt said, I think that the touchdown percentage for Stills is unsustainable. 42 catches, 726, and 9 touchdowns last year on the 81 targets. He's never going to be a guy with a very high catch rate, but at the same time, it's a pretty stable offensive unit now. Tannehill unfortunately got hurt. I don't know that they had much of a chance against the Steelers, even if he was healthy. So Matt Moore nearly got decapitated during that game and came back in. Talks of concussions and all that kind of stuff. But one other thing that is interesting about the Dolphins from a team perspective, not necessarily fantasy, they brought in three veteran defenders. They jettisoned Mario Williams, who's still on the free agency market, and maybe for quite a while.
He was terrible.
Yeah, they brought in Nate Allen at strong safety. They brought back Anthony Fasano, who started his career in Miami. He'll be there.
Yeah, he started his career in Dallas there, buddy boy.
I'm sorry. He was drafted by Dallas then, but he made his bones in Miami, catching some more passes. He's in his 11th season. He comes back to Miami after spending a couple of seasons in Tennessee. Lawrence Timmons. 10-year veteran of the Steelers. The Steelers let him walk for some ungodly reason. I don't know what that reason for that would be. They are very much a team that has, I would say, similar to New England. I think they just figure out a price for guys. They don't really break the bank for many players. Antonio Brown is obviously a unique case, and the quarterback is a unique case, but
and Le'Veon an Bell aging too. Player. They got some cap problems.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a 2-year deal at $12 million. Dolphins got Timmons as a steal. Is he the same Lawrence Timmons he was 5 years ago? Absolutely not. But I just like those moves in that they now have a lot of veteran leadership, and Ndamukong Suh is there. We know all the other guys that they have. So it's a veteran defense, maybe a little bit shading on the older side, but with this receiving core, it's kind of like what they're putting together. I think they could come back to the wild card. I would ask one last thing on the receivers. Landry had 94 catches last year. Stills, 42 catches. Devontae Parker, 56 catches. He has had a problem staying healthy, or he did. He had a problem staying healthy during his rookie season. But produced in the last 15 games last year, and there were flashes of him possibly being really good. Do we think Tannehill and the offense could be good enough to make Parker a star?
I think that's possible. I mean, like I said, I think the talent is immense. It's if I mean, Tannehill and him together, Tannehill being healthy, him taking that next step is really crucial into how far the Dolphins could actually go if they make that wild card. I think everybody agrees they're a wild card team, but are they a one and done wild card team? And he has weapons. Is Ajayi the man? Can Ajayi do it over the full season again? Let's see what happens. But I mean, as you say, Miami's in a good position, and they'll feast on the Jets and they'll beat up the Bills. So
the problem is going to be in that division. You're going to be a wild card team. Your first game is always going to be on the road. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to be playing up at 6-3, 5-4. So you're talking, you're going up likely against Houston or Denver, or Pittsburgh. Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, I mean those two defenses alone are going to be so formidable and challenging. And one of those teams is probably going to have Tony Romo. So,
and the biggest problem for Miami is going to be that offensive line. You know, they got Julius Thomas in some ways fixed the tight end position, but you let Brandon Albert go. So now all of a sudden you're weak at Tunsil, I imagine, will go to left tackle there. Maybe he plays well there, maybe he doesn't. But either way, you have other problems on offensive line too, and that's going to be their bugaboo as well.
Yeah, all right, cool. This is a good topic. We'll get back to this and more after the break. Mike, George, and Matt, we are the Roto Experts in the Morning. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. It's on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Matt, you doing okay, bud?
I am doing well today. I am okay. Doing very well.
I think it's with snow, okay. Mike. How much snow are you getting, Mike?
I don't know. I'm in my home studio, and it is windowless, so it's like a dungeon.
I didn't say how much snow you're getting now. I said how much snow are you getting?
Oh.
I think it's going to rain.
You live near me.
I don't really live anywhere.
You're much more.
I live like 45 minutes from you, Mike. I don't live anywhere near you.
It's the same general locale on planet Earth. We're relatively close.
Oh, so everybody on planet Earth. Oh, okay. You know, they do call it Long Island for a reason.
I know.
What am I, 40 miles
shockingly,
from you?
Probably. But I don't know. You are much more you're much more up on the weather than I am. This is a theme I have noticed. Yeah, it sucks. It's the worst.
That's why I'm up on the weather, because I got to go out there and shovel it tomorrow. Probably at the radio show in the morning.
I sometimes wax rhapsodic about living in an apartment in Manhattan when I had not a care in the world about taking care of my home or my property. That's right. Just I would walk out my steps out of my apartment building, and it was shoveled. It was good to go. I never, whether it was a blizzard, it didn't matter. I would just walk, go to a movie or go to a bar or something like that, and not a care in the world. Now, it's like I got a shovel. I got to put down salt. I got to shovel a second time to make sure I clean up this stuff and we don't get icy or in certain areas. It's the worst. I mean, it's just terrible.
Well, Mike, I'm living that dream for you right now.
I know you are. So. I'm jealous. I'm freaking jealous of it. And, like, I couldn't even use the snowblower the other day,
I'm
shoveling 5 inches of slush. It was like, it was just a workout, which I actually don't mind the fact that I'm getting exercise, but after a while, your back is just like, your back kills.
You feel good at first. You feel good. You work out a little cardio in there, lift something. You're right. Mike's like, it was slush. It was terrible. And it's all you're like, this just sucks.
Yeah. You're just like pushing it around. It just, you know. It's not like light, flaky snow where the kids can even come out and have fun. They're just like, they jump in, they're basically jumping in puddles at that point. But anyway,
Which my youngest loves to do, by the way.
Yeah, mine too. Like, she's ridiculous. She's, you know, she's a year and a half old, so she thinks everything is hilarious. And I mean,
I've been playing a lot of Yahtzee.
Cold within 30 seconds. Yahtzee? That's your go-to game?
Well, no, well, listen, I got to play a game that everyone can play, including the six-year-old.
Yeah.
She can play Yahtzee. Because she understands roll dice and try and match dice up. Playing a lot of Yahtzee.
Does that make sense?
I haven't played a Yahtzee in years. But
it had been a few decades for me until about 2 weeks ago. Then all of a sudden, it's Yahtzee. And they're all rooting, you know what? They're all rooting against me. They all want Daddy to lose. It's not fair. It's not nice.
Yeah, yeah, you're outnumbered big time, George, in your home. So in any event,
close.
Yeah. So George, I'm not picking on you by what I'm about to say next, but I just it's important, it's relevant to this discussion because going into the 2016 season, you liked the Jacksonville Jaguars. You thought they had turned the corner. They had made enough acquisitions through free agency and through the draft that you thought they kind
there.
Of turned the corner. So it didn't quite go your way. They picked up 3 wins, I believe, in the season. And they surprised. I don't know if I'm surprised or not. Maybe the general manager knows that he's done if this doesn't work. So he's just throwing a flyer. But they went nuts in free agency. It's not, they didn't sign 10 players, but they signed 6 players, and the one guy they had that was going to be a free agent, Patrick Omame, an offensive guard, was re-signed. But they went out, and they got the biggest cornerback available on the market, A.J. Bouye, former undrafted free agent. He's getting paid $44 million over the first 3 years of the deal. They signed veteran Calais Campbell, a 4-year deal worth $60 million. Don't worry about the total number on that. He's not going to see all of that money. But he was considered to be the defensive top defensive lineman available. And then your boy, Barry Church, he joined the Jaguars on a 4-year deal, not to mention Audie Cole, Lorente McCray, those 2 linebackers there, and Earl Watford, another guard. So offensive line was a weakness. They go out and get somebody and re-sign one of their own, and then they backed up everybody, and they got depth, and they got stars. Now that defensive backfield has a lot of name power behind it. So your thoughts, George, on the Jacksonville Jaguars? You like what they've done here? I mean, they jettisoned a few guys too. They lost Prince Amukamara. They get rid of Kevin Beachum. Jonathan Cyprian, who was a draft pick just 4 years ago, he's gone. So your thoughts on the Jaguars?
If at first you don't succeed, try again. That's what it seems to be, right? They did the same thing last season. That didn't work. Let's sign some more guys. It all comes down to Bortles. Can he not turn the ball over 18 times a game? You know, they don't need him to be great. You know, we know he can throw it. We know he can sling it somewhat, but can he sling it to the right guys? All right, so hit your own players. Can the running game pick it up? I mean, disappointing last year. Chris Ivey was one of my biggest disappointments. I understand he had the injury. Whatever that injury was early on was one of the strangest things. Right, we don't know exactly what happened there. Was they called it an illness? Well, what did he have? You know, it was very strange. It seemed to hurt him all season long. Yeldon was up and down, more down than up. Allen Robinson was disappointing. I mean, the offense is just inconsistent, to put it nicely. And I mainly put that on Bortles. He has to be better.
I kind of like what they're doing this season. I know last year everybody was high on them to maybe take that next step up, maybe even challenge for a possible wild card. I wasn't buying it because there was a lot of rookies through the draft on defense that they were putting in there. I thought it was going to take some time. I mean, as disappointing as Blake Bortles was, Allen Robinson was god-awful too. I mean, he's a guy that I definitely swung and missed on last year, and he's got to step it up. But I love the Bouye signing. I think they're doing the right things, like you said, like George said. Try again. You got to persevere here. The GM knows this is like his last lifeline. So, you know, I can't see Jacksonville being any worse.
That problem is that division's tough.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a tough division. I mean, I think there's some talent there. They definitely need to find somebody in the backfield as well, because that hasn't worked for them.
That can be found. You can find
George going into the year. Going into the year, we thought that was it was still the worst division in football, and they proved that these teams are turning it around. The Texans are good, and the Colts, God, we pick on the Colts all the time. They went 8-8. Luck just dragged them to 8 victories somehow, and the Titans are better. You know, they won 9 games, and the Titans have obviously are building in the right way. So
that's not a laughing stock anymore. You know, now
wouldn't you say the Jaguars are either the third or fourth best team? You could say conceivably if they turn things around, maybe they jump in front of the Colts. But the Colts are pretty good offensively. I would say they're good offensively. I mean, Frank Gore had another 1,000 yards, and they got all kinds of receivers. Some are producing better than others, but they can really just focus on defense and maybe pick up another offensive lineman in the draft.
I mean, just think how good the Texans will be this season with a healthy J.J. Watt, who they didn't have last year. I mean, the Texans are just prime. It's obviously the quarterback position, the Tony Romo, DeAndre Hopkins having a real quarterback is definitely a game changer. They got some good young wide receivers there. They have C.J. Fedorowicz, who's a competent tight end. Definitely like him. He's one of the guys that shined with Brock Osweiler because he couldn't throw anybody else. And, you got Lamar Miller. They said they're going to be smarter with him. So I think, all signs are pointing up. It's just you have to win that Romo sweepstakes, in my opinion.
But isn't that why, I find this interesting. I think you're exactly right. Houston and Denver, I get it. You don't want to give the pick to Dallas. Whatever pick Dallas wants, which I don't know.
Honestly, I give it. I don't even hesitate.
That's where I'm going with it. Because here's the thing. Whichever team, Romo will be released eventually if neither team gives a pick, right? So he'll be released. He'll sign, I would think, with Houston. I think that's where he wants to go. Mm-hmm. It's close to home. Doesn't have to leave his family, the kids and all that. I think Denver's going to regret it because I think the only way you're competing with New England, if you're really going for Super Bowls, is with the quarterbacks. Trevor Siemian's not beating Tom Brady. All right, Tom Savage is not beating Tom Brady. Whichever, they may say, hey, we don't want to give a fourth round pick for Romo, whatever it is. They're going to regret it. In December, in January, when they don't have Romo.
Well, I mean, it's not even New England that Denver has to worry about first. It's the Oakland Raiders. The Oakland Raiders are becoming much better. They're trying to improve the defense. They have the offensive weapons. And look, I don't think Jared Cook is going to be anything all world, but that's a better tight end
they had.
It's a better game player. He could make a big play, as he proved in the playoffs. But you got Crabtree, who's on the fantasy level, has been killing Amari Cooper's value, but Crabtree just produces. You just enhance the return game with the free agent signings. It's a team that I'm really high, and I love last year. The quarterback stepped it up. It was a shame he went down late in the season.
Oh. If you're a Raider fan, you must think you're cursed.
Yeah, no, it was pretty bad.
I mean, absolutely terrible to see that injury. Him and Mariota going down as well. You're right. The Raiders are an up-and-coming team. That whole division is actually a little rough. I mean, maybe San Diego. Not San Diego. I apologize.
L.A.
L.A.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
LA
We're all going to do it.
L.A. Chargers.
We're all going to do it. It's going to take a while to get used to that. The Chiefs are the team that – it's funny that I think the Chiefs' perception of people is like, they're not the real deal because nobody's in love with the quarterback. Yeah,
they're not
but they do win double digit games every year, right?
Yeah, but just watch that playoff game, as you said, against the Steelers. There was guys wide open, and he didn't even look downfield.
Right, he won't do it.
He bails on downfield throws. It's a problem.
They're not a real threat until they get a quarterback who's willing to. In this day and age, you can't have that kind of quarterback in this day and age. You can't do it. They're not that locked down defense where they're going to keep you 13 points. They're good. They're not great.
So, totally agree. I mean, I think Reed does a great job with that team, similar to how he did with the Eagles teams, but they just can't seem to get over the hump, and I think the quarterback is standing in their way. I wanted to discuss the Tony Romo thing when we come back. It's Mike, Matt, and George. Come back after the break talking Tony Romo and continue to explore NFL free agency and their fantasy impact on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back on the Roto Experts talking about the NFL free agency and their fantasy impact. Guys, we've spent a lot of time talking about him, but George, do you get a sense of Tony Romo's landing spot? I, for a long time now, I thought it was going to be Denver. Then Houston made all these moves, and it just seems there's a gaping hole at the quarterback position. Technically, Denver doesn't have that. I mean, the Texans only have Tom Savage there. And the Broncos have a guy who proved very much last year that he's just kind of a placeholder in Trevor Siemian, but they have a developmental quarterback. They spent a first-round pick on Paxton Lynch. Is he going to be ready to go this season? They probably hope so, but I don't know that they believe that. Hope is not a plan, as we like to say. So, George, do you have a sense of what you think the landing spot will be and exactly how this is going to play out?
Everyone's playing a game of chicken. That's really what it is. Yeah, Dallas is playing a game of chicken, assuming they can get a draft pick from Houston or Denver before they have to release Romo. Now, you can make an argument that Dallas should release him anyway because the draft pick's not going to be a day one, day two pick. It'll probably be a day three pick, maybe with a conditional to get to a third-round pick. Is that enough to get the cap hit you're going to take this year? the Cowboys, I think I'm taking the you'll get about $14 million back in cap space in June. If you make them a June 1st cut, you get $10 million next year. You can live with that, and you go that direction. Houston and Denver are sort of playing off against each other. You mentioned Denver, I guess, is in a better position. They could roll with Semien, and you got Paxton Lynch to rely on in the future. I get it, but I'll say it again. I think even whichever one of these teams does not get Romo, and one will, one won't, is going to regret it because they're going to be thinking, oh, you know, if I would have given up that fourth-round pick to go to a conditional third, I might still be alive in the playoffs. You know, I might have a shot at New England. My defense is that good. My skill position players are that good. I think Houston, really, I'm not going to say do whatever it takes, but if Dallas wanted a third, I'm giving up the third. They're a legitimate threat. That defense is very good. They have the running game. They have a good offensive line. They have good wide receivers. And you're getting Tony Romo. You have Tom Savage right now. You go from a team that can win a division and be get a bye to a Tom Savage, a wild card team at most.
I mean, I think Houston is primed. I think Denver is the team that has to do the trade, though, because if Romo is released, I think he's going to the Texans, as George mentioned earlier, you know, close to home, staying in. And I'm looking at the division. I'd rather be with the Texans. They have the offensive pieces. They have the defense. J.J. Watt coming back. I mean, Denver's defense is pretty damn good as well. But I think that AFC West is a tougher division than what he'd have to face if he signed with the Texans, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think where you want to live absolutely plays a role in what he's going to want to do. I think though you have to also consider, is he going to be more comfortable in Denver's organization with Elway running things than he would be in Houston? Denver's dealing with a new head coach, defensive-minded coach. And he's got Bill O'Brien there, who's obviously an offensive-minded coach and a guy that's worked with Brady in the past and the like and done a pretty good job developing quarterbacks in general. I guess you could give him a incomplete on Osweiler. It was a one-year deal.
He never
got
wanted
out of it.
Yeah.
They moved on. But he didn't want him, right?
Yeah, that was
so
forced.
He was giving a guy to work with.
Yeah, yep. that was a cluster. Cluster F.
Yeah, it's curious to me, and we've talked about it a little bit before about that. It has all the, in retrospect, it has all the makings. And I guess really in the moment, we thought this too, to some extent. That was an owner signing. Do you know what I mean? I don't know that Rick Smith, the GM, was hungry to go out and get Brock Osweiler and land him for that big money.
Did Denver a favor, right? Because they were going to sign him too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can't complain about that. There's always these signings. You know, the team that lands the guy is going to end up getting all the blame, but some other teams are saved from their own, I don't want to call it stupidity, but from their own bad decisions. The market dictated what Osweiler got, so I don't freak out about the money, but it's odd that it seems like two teams – seem to have kind of misevaluated what he was capable of? Or do you think he would have been more successful had he stayed in Denver?
Well, I think he'd have been more successful, sure. I guess they knew him a little better. I'll say it again. Yeah, in this day and age, you have to gamble on a quarterback. They gambled on us. Well, I'm sure they had read. I don't think they thought, oh, he's a can't miss. I'm sure they knew there was a chance, and he did. But in this day and age, you need a quarterback. This is why we see all these teams draft quarterbacks up top of the draft. I mean, most drafts, the quarterback is not the number one player. There's a better wide receiver, a better defensive end, whatever it might be. But if you're without a quarterback, you can't win. And how often are you at the top of these drafts? So you have no choice but to take these guys. And when a quarterback comes on the market, it's unusual. We saw the same thing this year with Mike Glennon. No one really knows if Glennon's going to be that guy, but he gets $14, $15 million a year for a team that's willing to take a chance.
Yeah, I think the Texans last year had the mindset that with their defense, they just needed a game manager. There was talent there. They brought in Lamar Miller. You had, you know, DeAndre Hopkins on the outside. So I think they were just expecting somebody that could just get them over the hump, get them in the playoffs. You know, he was decent with Denver the year before. He was able to, you know, he wasn't anything spectacular. But, yeah, that thing just blew up. And
so you both think it's Houston for Romo?
I do.
Unless Denver gives up a pick, yeah.
Yeah, I think Denver has to make the trade.
I don't think Denver will, because I think they go, oh, I'm not giving up a pick if I got Lindstrom and Semien. I think they should.
That's right.
But I don't think they will.
I think it's
right. I think Houston's gambling on this as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a game of chicken, you know. And it'll be really interesting to see Romo in a uniform, because the irony of all of this, and I've said it before, is of all these quarterbacks that are out there in free agency, he's the one that has the most risk attached to him. He's actually the most talented, but he also has the most risk attached to him. He's got really significant injuries. In some ways, I'm kind of surprised that he can still get out there and play. Maybe he shouldn't, but whatever. Players play. We've said that many times before.
Yeah, I'm
so,
a little surprised.
Yeah, what's the over-under on games played by Tony Romo?
Well, I think
I'll set the over-under, and you guys will –
But you're making a joke. The thing is, what's the over-under on what Houston or Denver would accept? Because they know it as well. How many games would Denver and Houston want from him? I think both teams would take 12 and the playoffs.
I was going to say yes. Oh, absolutely. That'd be a home run.
I agree. That would be a home run.
I think that's what they're looking for. They're really he's going to miss 3-4 games, and they can survive with Thomas.
I mean, they're going to pay him $20 million, so you should expect home runs for $20 million. But
but isn't Mike Glennon getting like $15 million per
right, so
now?
That's not right. So someone brought that up. Like, if Mike Glennon gets $15 million, then Romo's contract's really not as much out of whack as you think. It's just the fact that it's the salary cap hit, and he's getting $24 million against that. That's out of whack. $20 million is not nowhere near close to out of whack for what Romo can do.
No, it's not at all. It's not. But I'm just saying that, you know, there's going to be an investment there. You know, it is funny. Like, we're talking about all this quarterback stuff. Like, say Romo's not going to stay there, but say Romo did stay, George. His cap plus Prescott's salary is about what the other top quarterbacks are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you can make the argument Dallas doesn't have to get rid of him, and you can make the argument Dallas even should keep him.
Yeah, they don't have to get rid of him, but that would just create too much of a...
And Romo wants to play.
Yeah. Anytime that kid has a bad game, they'll be calling for Romo. Romo's going to want to play. I mean, he handled it so classy last season, but and he had to do it that way because that kid deserved that chance at that point, in my opinion. But they have to move on from Tony Romo here.
Dallas has done everything right, probably up until this point. But I don't blame the Joneses for holding on to him, seeing if they can get a good draft pick, you know. And but I think sometimes with I think we all do this with Jerry and Stephen Jones, especially Jerry Jones. He's a reactionary guy. What is he thinking? Oh, Bradford, 1-4 last year. Romo's 10 times the quarterback as Bradford is. Why can't I get that? Or something close to that. Different situation. So it wouldn't shock me at all if this drags on quite a bit longer.
Yeah, I think he's got to get like a number 2 in order to absorbing that cap hit.
Agreed.
I think you got to get a 2. Otherwise, you know what? For your team, in the long run, you're better off cutting him.
I 100% agree with Matt. I think it has to be at least a number 2, and no one's giving that up.
That's right. That's right. So I think that's how it plays out. I think it's a release and then probably off to Houston. So we'll see. For a long time, I thought it was going to be Denver, and now it's just looking like Houston made more sense. Houston has opened up everything for him to land there, right?
Is there any chance that – I'm sorry. Is there any chance that Romo takes the Fox role that they're offering him as the number 2 guy?
You have to this, I think, comes down to what his family's saying. Because I, as the Cowboy fan, I do in some ways think Romo should retire. He's beat up. You know, that's 3 collarbone breaks now in a couple of years. He's had back injuries as well. He's got the kids. You know, if I'm a football player, once you've made all that money, he's made all that money. I want to make sure I have a life.
I thought he was retiring last season. I mean, after that injury, I figured he'd stay on with the team as the backup. Probably wouldn't have to play. If they went to the Super Bowl and won, he gets a ring.
You got some financial agreement, the contracts, blah, blah. And Fox wants
him. What the hell are the Texans going to do if he retires?
He'll have a new contract with Houston. It'll be incentive laden. So
What if he retired? You know what? The Tom Savage era begins. What do they sign? Jay Cutler? Good luck, man. If they don't get him,
Bill O'Brien's.
I mean, they've opened it up.
They'd be a homicide on the side.
I know he isn't. Yeah, Kaepernick. You know who else is out there? bring back Charlie Whitehurst? I don't even know what they would do. So,
Charlie Whitehurst reference. Well done.
Yeah. So in any event, we'll be back after the break. I wanted to talk about something because something came up earlier in the show. I looked back at the draft, and it's interesting to look at. So Mike, George, and Matt back after this. Hey, kids. Welcome back. Thanks for listening today. Hit us up all day on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. You can hit Matt up at CTM, as in Matt Baseball. Hit George up at George Kurtz. Hit me up at Mike Blewett. Coming up after this at 10 o'clock is Weekend Fantasy Update with Joe Galina, Mike Florio, and Frank Stamfull. That's followed by Fantasy Basketball Weekly with Mike Florio and Frank Stamfull. Then you got Father and Son Fantasy NASCAR Hour with Scott and Sean Engel. And then we have the Fight Network's Bookie Beatdown, the Fan Rag, Fantasy Baseball, a replay of yesterday's show with Al Melchior, then the Pat Mayo Hour, Rusty's Fantasy, Fantasy Football Frenzy with Corey Parson, replay of show earlier this week, then High Stakes Fantasy Football and the Fantasy Hall of Fame Hour with Scott Engel. So, full slate today, but the Weekend Fantasy Update, guys, coming up next. So, guys, you were talking about, I think it was Matt mentioned something earlier in the show, or it was really us talking about Devontae Parker and how, you know, his rookie season, a lot of injuries, year number two, not massive production, but we're seeing the trajectory go up. And he was my favorite wide receiver coming out of that 2015 draft, other than Amari Cooper. But here's the first round, and there's a lot of wide receivers that went in this first round. Amari Cooper, obviously, star, right? People are still mad at him because he didn't produce late in the season, but so be it. He didn't have Derek Carr, and he had a couple of dud games. I get it, but overall, he had a really good season. He was the fourth overall pick, the seventh overall pick, Kevin White from the Bears. The next wide receiver off the board was Devontae Parker at 14. The next wide receiver off the board at number 20, Nelson Agholor from the Eagles. The next wide receiver off the board at 26, Breshad Perriman. And the next one off the board at 29 to the Colts, Philip Dorsett. That is a lot of duds so far, George.
Yeah, well, we see that, right? I remember the draft, as far as dynasty leagues, it was between Cooper and White. People were debating there. I think there was also a big-time running back that came out as well. That was the
Gurley.
Gurley, yes. He was the consensus number one. Overall there, but I remember being on the unfortunate end of that, where someone took Gurley and I ended up getting White. Oh, well.
And I think Pro Football Focus has ranked Nelson Agholor like the worst wide receiver in football.
Ended up with him, too.
Yeah. And so, I mean, he's been
Dude, they benched him to give him a mental break because he was so bad. It's not an appropriate reaction for an NFL player to need a mental break in the middle of the season.
And after that draft, I heard a lot of people saying he was a seventh-round pick, and, you know, Nelson Agholor is one of the guys that's going to be ready, and that went kaboom. But, I mean, that definitely – I mean, Amari Cooper, I love Amari Cooper. It's just the problem. He's got Crabtree there, and, I mean, Crabtree gets the red zone targets. He, you know – Crabtree hurts Cooper's value. That's just the main problem. I mean, without a guy of that stature, Amari Cooper could be putting up such bigger numbers. But, you know, it helps David Carr.
That's true. But, I mean, he was a second-round pick last year, was Cooper. And he had 83 catches and 1,153 yards and 5 scores. The touchdowns would bother you a little bit because Crabtree had 8. He only had 5. Heck, Seth Roberts also had 5. I think what frustrated people was down the stretch, Cooper didn't have any big games after their bye week, and there was talks that he was possibly struggling with injuries.
Dropped some balls, too.
Yeah, he did. 4 for 57 and a touchdown, 4 for 22, 2 for 59 and a touchdown, 5 for 29, 1 for 28. That's in week 15, which is brutal because I had him in a fantasy semifinal matchup, and I lost.
It's all about you.
He was so bad. I'm just saying I was one of those people that was really frustrated by him. 5 for 76 in week 16. He actually got one of his 5 touchdowns in week 17, which typically doesn't count. So I mean, his stats overall are good, but, you know, there was just a 6 weeks to end the season where you felt like you weren't really getting much out of him, and I guess that's frustrating for people. But a second-round pick putting up 83 for, what, 11-53 and five scores, you like that, no, George?
Overall, you do, but he disappointed when it counted. So that's what people remember. And he also, like I said, he dropped some passes, including some big passes that would have gone for touchdowns, as I can remember. So I think that's what people are looking at there. Listen, it happens. We all have players that disappoint us at times. Numbers are great, but when you get those numbers may matter more than anything else.
I mean, like I said, I really like Amari Cooper. And, you know, when you got, like, Crabtree there, who's got 89 receptions, and he's the guy in the end zone that gets the targets. He had the, you know, almost triple the amount of touchdowns, was it? He had, what was it, 8-3 or something like that? So, I mean, that's the thing that's holding Cooper back. I have a question here, though. What do you think hurts more? Does the Brandon Marshall to the Jets, in my opinion, that hurts Odell Beckham more than DeSean Jackson going to Tampa Bay? Because I think DeSean Jackson isn't that volume guy. I mean, he's that deep threat that's going to do it, but I don't think he's that volume guy, and I think Marshall will hurt Odell Beckham more.
I would agree. I would absolutely agree, yeah, that Marshall will be he's more of a prototypical outside wide receiver, take some of those catches away with DeSean Jackson, the a deep guy.
Because, I mean, look.
I don't know that I'd agree with that sentiment, if only because of this. Whether because he's a brat or not, they forced the ball to Odell, and I think they'll continue to do that. We talked earlier in the show about how Marshall could really hurt Sterling Shepard. I don't see Odell's stats suffering much. If there was any kind of regression, I think it would be slight because the passing offense runs through him. I think Marshall will play a complementary role and a positive one, but I don't see it. And I understand the comparison that you're making. And no, I don't think DeSean Jackson has any kind of bad impact on Mike Evans, but I also don't think that Marshall will badly alter Odell Beckham in any way.
It was just 2 years ago that Marshall was a wide receiver one in fantasy, and last year was a bust mainly because it was Bryce Petty, Richard Todd, and Pat Ryan throwing to him.
I like the Richard Todd one at the end. But my thing is this, is if you watch the Giant games, I mean, Eli is just glued to Beckham. Now he has that other option. I mean, Shepard wasn't ready or he wasn't comfortable, with however you want to frame it. But now he's got Brandon Marshall, who's going to the Giants because he wants to win, wants to go to the playoffs. So, I mean, look, I still think Beckham is number two. But, I mean, I think Mike Evans' argument is there. The Julio Jones, the problem with Julio Jones is I always just fear the guy is going to get hurt. He is amazing. He is, you know, hands down elite. But I think after Antonio Brown, I think there's a good argument going there from 2 to 4. That's the point I'm trying to bring up.
Like you could, for fantasy purposes, you think Evans could be the second wide receiver off the board?
I mean, I honestly do. I think it's another. I think getting that weapon in DeSean Jackson, I think really helps him because it's going to make the defenses have to put their attention on him, and it could free up Evans a little bit more. Evans is going to get the red zone targets. There's no question about that. I mean, the 3 touchdowns he got 2 years ago, I knew that was an aberration, and I knew he's going to hit double digits coming into 2016. And he's a beast. I mean, Mike Evans is a beast as well. Look, I think Beckham, I mean, on talent alone, Beckham could be the number one guy. I mean, even over Antonio Brown. But Beckham still has some maturity issues. And I'm not saying Beckham shouldn't be number two. I'm just saying that I think there's an argument that can be made.
George, you agree with that? I can't disagree on Evans. That guy gets the ball forced to him more than any receiver in the NFL. And there's a lot of teams forcing a lot of balls to a lot of wide receivers. But when you watch Tampa play, he's got to get involved. And they force it to him even when he's not open because he's so big he can make those plays.
I mean, if I think I'm drafting right now, I'm definitely thinking Brown 1, probably Beckham 2. I say probably because there is an argument to be made there. Jones is one that probably scares me the most because of the injury every year now. He's got this foot injury that keeps him out or hinders him for a couple of games, and it becomes frustrating. I believe he just had surgery on it. So hopefully that alleviates the problem there. So I might have him Brown, Beckham, Evans, Jones.
Yeah. Yeah, so this segment wasn't intended to bash Amari Cooper or any of that other kind of stuff. It was to really pick on the other guys that haven't done anything. Kevin White and Devontae Parker's actually getting some stuff done. But I hated the Philip Dorsett and Breshad Perriman draft picks the second that they happened. I thought Aguilar actually made sense, and I don't really know what to say about the manner in which he hasn't produced. Obviously they don't have a lot of
faith. I didn't mind Dorsett as the player. I just minded the position they took. How about fix the defense?
It's ridiculous. Yeah, they had no defense, and the offensive line isn't that good. They're drafting it's a vanity pick.
Pathetic.
Guys there. What?
The offensive line's good. It's pathetic.
Yeah, that was the other
you're right.
They could have helped out him.
You're right.
You know, the man's getting killed there.
And then, he got killed. Hurt.
Yeah, your franchise.
And he got hurt. They drafted a wide receiver in the first round, and then he got hurt and was out for the year.
That reminds me of another owner who's too involved, who wants the sexy pick, doesn't want to make the team needed pick. I mean, Jerry Jones had to be talked into this, not to take Johnny Manziel and to go for Zach Martin. We've seen this over and over again with these owners. They want the guy they can publicize.
That was one of the best moves that ever happened to the Cowboys, not getting Johnny Manziel.
You know, Stephen Jones almost hit him over the head with a hammer.
Of all the crazy owners in sports, I don't think Jim Irsay gets quite enough burn. I'm telling you, the guy is off his rocker, and he if he got more publicity, I think we'd realize it. Instead, people just pick on Jerry Jones and some other guys out there. But in any event, good show, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you, folks, for listening. That was 3 hours up and 3 hours down on the Roto Experts in the Morning. You got the Weekend Fantasy Update coming up next with Joe Galina, Mike Florio, and Frank Stanfill. George and I are back tomorrow. Matt's got to prepare for a 17-hour draft that's occurring tomorrow. I like that he thought it was going to be over in 4 hours. 750 picks in 4 hours. Good luck with that. You'll get no sleep tomorrow, Matt. So good luck with that. We'll be back tomorrow, 7 a.m., George and Mike on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Enjoy your day, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.